Fresh Air with Terry Gross coming up here on 89.3 immediately following Air Talk. At noon, Terry talks with Jesse, who is first novel won a National Book Critics Circle Award, and his new novel, Transcendent Kingdom. It takes a look at science, religion, depression, addiction, and race. Ambitious themes in Jesse's new book that's coming up, Fresh Air with Terry Gross, at noon today. And then on Take Two with A. Martinez at Two, the Committee for Greater L.A. joins the show to reveal findings of its new report on the COVID-19 pandemic and its effect on Black and Brown Angelenos. That is Take Two with A, coming up at 2 o'clock on KPCC. But we turn our attention now to online learning and what we are learning about the best ways for kids to sit in front of a screen and take their instruction. Joining us to provide advice is Chief Research Officer at Child 360, LA-based nonprofit focused on assisting parents, teachers, and early education administrators with educational opportunities, Dawn Kurtz. Ms. Kurtz, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So particularly for the little ones, this can be a challenge to have them learning in front of screens and, you know, being able to sit still to do that. What are we learning about the most effective ways of doing that out of classroom instruction?
What we're learning is that we really need to take a balanced approach. And of course, technology has a place, but we need to make sure that we're supplementing that technology and really making sure that parents understand the types of learning opportunities that they can be creating for their young children.
All right. And so are there some advantages for some of the young ones in being able to do it online? Because, you know, maybe if they're fidgety or harder for them to sit still, maybe in some ways it's less disruptive, you know, for them to do that online instead of in a classroom?
There are certainly less distractions. You know, you have the child and the piece of technology, and you're able to do more of the one-on-one instruction, and that definitely has its place. It's easy for kids to get fidgety when they're in front of a computer as well, and it's a little bit less interactive, which obviously with very young children, we want to focus on being as interactive as possible. So one suggestion is, when possible, for parents to participate with their children and sort of walk them through the technological experience and the learning opportunities, talk with their children about what they're learning on the digital display, and really create a hybrid experience where the child is using technology, but also interacting with the parent or another caregiver that has the time to sit with them and go through the activity.
Yeah, what happens in households where the parents are working while they're at home and, you know, maybe they're keeping an eye on their little one but can't really be actively involved during the time their child's online?
So one of the things I like to tell parents, and I've been saying this repeatedly over the past 6 months, is we have to really right-size our expectations about how the learning is going to happen and when the learning is going to happen. And so, you know, if parents are working and they're not able to interact with the child at certain times, they can take advantage of learning opportunities throughout the day and in the evening and on the weekend. So, you know, there will be times where children unfortunately have to sit in front of a computer by themselves because that's just the reality of our current circumstances. But parents can also create opportunities outside of those specific time periods to engage with their children about what they learned, to have their children talk about how it feels to learn through technology, and just sort of help the child process what's happening, because this is such a different experience for everyone, really, but certainly for young children. And, you know, that can happen at any time of the day in any environment. And for me, it really is about making sure that we help parents identify those teachable moments, the different opportunities throughout the day to provide learning opportunities that might supplement what a child has learned in their online learning, and really just continue to try and build learning opportunities throughout the day.
We're talking with early childhood education expert Don Kurtz from Child 360. Also with us from USC's Rosier School of Education, professor of clinical education and chair of the Master of Arts in Teaching program at the School of Ed at USC, Professor Eugenia Mora Flores. Professor, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you've taught middle school, you've taught at the elementary school level, and you have three kids perfectly arranged right now, one in elementary, one in middle school, one in high school. You planned that great for our conversation. So is there any gap between sort of theoretically what you've learned and what you teach as a professional educator and what you're actually seeing in your house?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things that I think we want our students at the university level learning to become teachers to understand is the diversity of the families and understanding that what we can expect of productivity from students or abilities to keep up with the online or distance learning platform, a lot of it, we have to think of it through an equity lens. You know, are families available to help their children? Are they not available to help their children? You know, how intentional and clear are we being as teachers about what our expectations are for students with the understanding that they might not have somebody at home who can help them? And so as a parent, I think that what I have found is this clear expectations is paramount. This is exactly what I expect you to do. These are the activities that you're going to do when you're not with me as a teacher on the computer. These are the activities you'll do on the computer. And, you know, we lay out these great plans, and that is definitely something we remind our teachers of, is the importance of the explicit nature of sharing with students what's expected. However, one of the things that I've learned as a parent is that, you know, things happen. You know, students have hiccups here and there. They don't understand how to do something. And as you mentioned, being a working mom, my students, as right now, there's actually four of them. I have two in middle school. And, you know, they're kind of on their own doing their thing. And so they do come in and ask. And half the time I'm in a class saying, okay, hold on, I'll get back to you. So I really think it's important that when we're planning for distance learning, we have to plan it through an equity lens of how diverse the home contexts are for students and what that means in terms of how teachers and parents set up checkpoints. You know, this is when we'll, you know, ask parents to please check to make sure the students know what they're doing. As a parent, I set checkpoints for my children. I will be checking every Wednesday or Friday to make sure that you've completed the assignment. So so to your last question, there are definitely differences,
yeah,
earlier from what the elementary and the middle and the high schools are doing. There's the flexibility of independence, the flexibility of being able to figure out and track for yourself the learning management platforms, how to troubleshoot if your video's not working during your live session. So there are definitely differences in how we think about the level of independence that students will bring to their home learning experiences through that equity-minded lens.
Well, and I just wonder as well if parents are going to take on additional responsibility for what kids learn. Is that something that every parent can do? Can kind of come up with, well, you know, here are things based on your interests you can do aside from time that you're online learning to learn, or do kids often naturally gravitate toward those things anyway? That just because they are sponges, that it's just a matter of sort of, you know, helping point them in the direction of their interests.
Absolutely. I think it's a mixture of both. I mean, I think we definitely have students who they get off of their live session with their teacher and just were so interested and inspired by something that they were talking about in class, and they just start to explore it on their own. Or if they were engaged in a hands-on activity with their teacher during class and then class ends and they just want to keep creating and crafting. But then we also have students that, you know, part of just their day-to-day natural home experiences are them engaging in things that are interesting to them, things that they want to explore on their own. So I think that the role of a teacher is that they can initiate those opportunities through the range of tasks and activities and content that we teach children So I think it's both. I think we definitely have a way where families will do that for their children and provide opportunities, provide whether it's materials or resources or ideas or just opportunities to talk with each other. And then teachers can present opportunities where then students can be inspired and become interested in exploring them on their own. So I do believe that the opportunity to learn beyond the classroom is really paramount to the work of a teacher. I'll leave you with this quote. One of my parents, when I taught middle school, said to me in one of our parent conferences, the role of a teacher is to have the students want to keep learning well after the book has been closed.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely what we're talking about here.
We're talking with USC Professor Eugenia Mara Flores, a professor of clinical education. Also joining us, Aaron Powers, director of the National Board of Professional Teaching Standards at UCLA's Center X, which provides advanced teaching credentials for K through 12 teachers. She has more than 20 years' experience as a secondary and high school teacher and instructional coach. Thank you very much, Ms. Powers, for being with us today. What do you think are the most important things that we're learning about how high school age students learn online?
Well, I think that one of the challenges for high school age students is that they don't have the normal social interaction that they might have in a regular, everyday, face-to-face setting. However, for many years now, adolescents have become very savvy at using the available technology that we have. And so in that way, they might be better positioned than younger students to stay connected, both with their friends and with their teachers.
And yeah, how much can sort of outside of what they're learning in school be encouraged and cultivated by parents? I mean, at least I remember for me in high school, I felt like I actually learned more outside the classroom pursuing my own reading and own interest than I did formally in high school. But I wonder, is that something that, I mean, this is a perfect time for that kind of thing to happen.
Yeah, I agree that this could potentially be the golden age of self-directed learning. And it's going to vary from student to student. I know some students have an awful lot of work right now that they're attending to for school. But if there is some spare time, I would, as a parent, want to explore with my students any issues that they might be really concerned about right now. I mean, in these times, I think that we can tend to have this uncertainty that can kind of stifle us and bring us down. But if there's an issue that a teen is concerned about, maybe they have a friend who also has that same concern, if they could do some research together and then maybe come up with a potential solution or recommendation and find sort of an authentic audience for that solution. And if they're able, that could be a city council, a grocery store manager, the leader of a movement, but if they could create together some sort of way to communicate that issue and solution through a letter or a video message, maybe a presentation, I think that something like that could be a really meaningful experience during a time like this.
We're talking with Aaron Powers of UCLA's Center X, providing advanced teaching credentials through K through 12 educators. Again, I'd like to hear from you if you're a parent or a student to talk about what you're learning about the most effective way to learn online with classrooms closed. What's working, what not? What are you seeing from teachers that seems to be particularly effective? And what are you finding is more spinning wheels and not particularly beneficial? 866-893-KPECC. That's 866-893-5722. Also the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You can tweet at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. We'll be back in 90 seconds on AirTalk. It's Hair Talk on 89.3 KPECC. As a parent or a student, what are you learning about education online? What seems to be ineffectual? What is particularly good and enjoyable about online education? 866-893-KPECC. As we are 6 months into the COVID-19 pandemic, The question is, what have we learned? You know, one of the things that I've been looking at is sort of a general critique that schools still seem to have had a challenge training teachers on most effective practices for online learning. And maybe that's not schools and districts' fault, because they were trying to gear up to do in-person education when the number of COVID-19 cases were lower, and the thought was they'd be able to open up their door and, you know, do through following the pandemic guidelines, you know, be able to safely offer in-class instruction. Then they had to pivot, go back to what they were doing. So maybe they weren't able to make as much progress with teacher training and best practices as had been anticipated. But it's a chance for you to weigh in. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Kathy in Reseda, good to have you with us. I understand you're the mom of a high schooler. What's her experience like learning online?
She's absolutely exhausted at the end of the day from just being in front of the screen all day. In the past, when she was at school, she'd come home, she just sparked interest, she would do her own research, and now I'm actually seeing the opposite. She doesn't want to FaceTime her friends. So that social part also has gone down, because just being in front of the computer and in front of the screen, she just has no energy to do that. Doesn't really want to do anything afterwards.
And is she someone who, aside from the social, did her own independent learning beyond what she was getting in high school when she was able to be in class?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we have, like, you know, when you look at it through an equity lens, she has certain benefits in our home where we would talk about the things that she was learning. And then if there was a particular thing that sparked her interest, we would go to, you know, a gallery or do those sorts of things. And right now, that's not an option. But she will ask, oh, so you're learning about, you know, the American Revolution. Talk to us about that. And she'll give us, like, the bare bones, but not to the extent of the conversation we would have in the past.
Hmm. And so what are your thoughts about this? Do you feel like you have any options to try and, you know, limit the number of hours? Yes, she has to do this. Is there no choice? What have you talked with her about? What's the next step?
Her school is really good at how they transitioned back into the school year. They did half days and then they transitioned to the full days. And so we're still kind of in that place of, let's see what this really looks like. Let's see what homework's going to look like, and then let's look at some solutions. Right now, all we say to her is, you know, just make sure you're getting enough sleep, make sure you're doing the work that you need to do, and we'll just have to figure it out
yeah.
when we get more of a sense of what this really means for us.
Kathy, I appreciate it so much. Let me go back to our guest who has the specialty with middle and high school ages, Erin Powers of UCLA. Your thoughts for Kathy and you know, the exhaustion her daughter's facing.
Yeah, this news of this exhaustion, it's not surprising. Unfortunately, we do know about Zoom fatigue, and that's something that's real. And I think that as schools are trying to sort of set up and navigate what the day-to-day is going to be like for students, they're still learning how much of this time on the screen is going to be helpful and when and how does it need to be limited. So I hope that you're able to be in touch with your daughter's school and give them that feedback.
So, what would you specifically say if this was your daughter and you felt like this isn't productive, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul. What would you say to the administrators if this was your kid going through this?
I would let them know about the fatigue and the exhaustion from the screen time. And I would recommend that, you know, maybe classes meet every other day instead of meeting daily. I know high school students tend to take 6 or 7 courses a day. That seems like a lot of transition in a normal day. And then on a screen, I just can't imagine what kids are experiencing that way. So I would make a recommendation like that. And to think more about how to incorporate that sort of paper learning, maybe some book work, some textbooks, some things that they don't have to be looking at the screen, because it's not just the schoolwork that's creating the exhaustion, but it's just all the uncertainty of the world. I think that's weighing on all of us. whether we're conscious of it or not.
Kathy, we wish you and your daughter all the best with this challenge. Let's talk with high school chemistry teacher Hassan in Hawthorne. Hassan, what's your experience teaching your students online?
Well, it hasn't been easy, I can promise you that. One of the main things that concerns me is the sense of redundancy. We're trying to make it seem like we're actually in school. So I'm sitting at my desk teaching chemistry six times over and over again, when I feel like if I could just teach it once, then that would save me a lot of time to do other things like one-on-one instruction for my students. At the same time, the students are also forced to be in my class at a particular time. But if I pre-record it, then they can watch the video when it may be more convenient and appropriate for them. So my question is, why are we so committed or fascinated with the idea of doing these live sessions instead of having everything be pre-recorded and do live as a one-on-one if necessary?
Yeah, and so if I'm understanding you, Hassan, so your lecture would be recorded, available anytime, but that it would free you up to actually do like smaller groups or one-on-one, really allowing you more time to provide individualized help for your students.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's talk with USC professor of clinical education, Eugenia Mara Flores. What do you think about Hassan's recommendation?
Yeah, so I think that we also think about work that's been done in the past, for example, on flipped classrooms, where students would preview, you know, the lectures or whether it's the readings or the lectures before coming to class, you know, a live class session, so that then the way that we engage with the content is varied. So the lecture being one of the ways in which we deliver content could be a flipped classroom approach where they watch a pre-recorded lecture, but those opportunities to be with you, the teacher, can be varied in terms of how do we then talk about that content? How do we then explore that content in a new way? So thinking about how then we take up the content when we're with the students could vary and could take on a variety of different pedagogical, you know, approaches. We could engage in thinking about the content through a new lens, connecting it to other content areas, thinking about the application in the real world. So again, thinking about how we engage with students around our content could then help us understand what are the types of things that we can have them do asynchronously before coming to my class or after leaving the class, and what are the most important things for me to do during class that if it's going to be a lecture, maybe the lecture was something they could have previewed, then we could change up what we do when we're together face-to-face. But I do appreciate all the time and energy that's being put into sitting. I hear you sitting at your desk all day or at your tables at home teaching all of these different sections, because I think as was shared earlier, this is a new space, and I think schools are still learning what it means to take an on-campus traditional face-to-face experience for learners and teachers and put that in an online platform. At USC, we've been providing online teacher education for over 10 years, and so we've learned along the way. And what I'm sharing with you are things that we have learned. You know, what are the asynchronous opportunities, and then what does that mean for my synchronous opportunities where I can really dive into my content in new ways, in exploratory ways, and in ways that kind of mixes up what we actually do in a live session.
We're talking with USC Professor Eugenia Mara Flores, Aaron Powers of UCLA Center X with us, Don Kurtz of Child 360 to offer advice on online learning for those in early childhood, pre-K students, and the like. We're taking your calls. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Hassan, we appreciate your call. We also have another high school teacher who's going to be joining us also from Hawthorne. Dane will be with us in a moment. I'm asking parents, teachers, students to share what you're learning about online instruction. What do you think works? What's a dud? What do you think needs to be tweaked to provide a better online learning experience? 866-893-KPECC. We'll be back in 1 minute. Best to avoid the Golden State Freeway, the 5, in the Sun Valley area. It's been closed because of an investigation of someone potentially contemplating suicide from an overpass. So just avoid that area right now if you can. Again, the 5 Golden State Freeway near Tuxford Street in the Sun Valley area while that police activity is going on. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. A reminder that Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes up at noon. At 2 o'clock, it's Take 2 with A. Martinez and Nick Kwa, host of the LAS Studios podcast, Servant of Pod, talk about whether a professional broadcasting voice is really just a standard developed by white people. That'll be Nick Kwa coming up on Take 2. Love it. Great topic. I'll take 2 with A. Martinez. All right. We're continuing with online education on KPCC and what we're learning about that experience, regardless of age range. We're taking your questions at 866-893-KPCC, the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Dane is a high school teacher calling from Hawthorne. Dane, good to have you with us. What are you learning about distance learning?
Well, Larry, I've actually had a different experience than the chemistry teacher you just had on. My students have felt negatively about teachers who've done pre-recorded lessons. They actually really like the live instruction when it's done, you know, properly and with good instruction, but they like having the back and forth, and they find it hard to watch a 45 or hour long video without having any sort of interruption or being able to interact or ask questions.
All right. Now, do you have time, though, to do smaller group follow-up or individualized consultation with your students? Or because you're doing all of your class periods live, does it limit what you can do?
I think everyone has limits, like the other callers have said, but our district is currently doing a half and half. We do a block schedule where you have half of your periods, odds or evens, from 8 to noon. And then from 12 to 3, they're allowed to come into office hours or email with questions or get feedback on work. So it's a hybrid model.
All right. Dane, thanks very much. I appreciate it. Let's talk with Cynthia in Diamond Bar. You're on Air Talk. You have a 14-year-old son who's learning online. So what's his experience like?
Yep. I just wanted to just share that basically I feel like to him, in my opinion, I feel like it's benefited him to be online every single day and being able to interact with his classmates and his teacher. I do know that they do have those after school hours where they can ask questions individually to the teachers, but I feel like my son hasn't taken advantage of that so much. He's shyer, so I feel like he just does better when he's in the class and able to participate as a group. So I really feel that's beneficial, as well as just you know, getting some type of interaction with other people instead of just having to listen to a video and then kind of answering questions and asking questions on a one-on-one base with the teacher. I feel like it'll just benefit him a lot more to have that interaction with the classroom and with the teacher on a daily basis.
And does your son, does he feel fairly comfortable speaking up when the class is online? Because one thing I've heard is that for some students who may be a bit shyer, it's a little harder sometimes to chime in a live class online than if you're physically in the room.
I've actually noticed with my son in particular, he's participated a lot more, being, I guess, in the comfort of his room.
Yeah. It's given him a little more confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great to hear. Cynthia, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Aaron Powers, UCLA Center X. Interesting to hear. It just reminds us how, you know, what every student brings to the learning experience is so different from each other, is so individualized.
It's so true. Every child is so different. And I was thinking about that last comment about the student who was a little more willing to share in the comfort of his own home. One of the things that online learning can provide is different ways to participate. So if they're on a program or a platform like Zoom, they might be able to use the chat feature. The teacher might be able to create polls for students and they can interact that way. And that can sometimes build up a little confidence for them to actually be able to raise their hand in a synchronous session and ask a question or add a comment.
All right, well, let me share some more comments from listeners. Let's see. We have California RM. Larry, the inaccessibility of all of the IT-related connectivity issues are very trying. Our first graders using an iPad provided by the district. It's a complete mess. Professor Eugenia Mora Flores, even with hotspots, even with provided Chromebooks or iPads, we keep hearing that the tech side of this is still a huge challenge for students.
Absolutely. When we think about the diversity of our families in their homes, in their home environments, we need to think about what are those backup plans. We still need to give students access to the content, to the development of their skills, to the support from their teachers. So we think about, if the child isn't able to log on, if the child doesn't have access to strong enough Wi-Fi and they keep getting kicked out of the Zoom room, how then do we think about what they'll need for us to be able to support them? Is there a way that we can provide materials that they can work through, but then at the same time set up kind of one-on-one opportunities or small group office hours for the students to come on if it needs to be over a phone, because maybe the phone would be a better way to communicate without worrying about the dropping of the video or the audio sound. So I think that when we approach the diversity of our families, we have to really think about all of these different possible scenarios, the what ifs. What if this isn't working? What if this is the case? Even families, as we shared earlier, that have the technology are still struggling in so many ways. So I think as we go, we learn what are those challenges? How then can we problem solve and plan for the many and very different needs that students have, understanding that in the end, we do need to provide each and every one of those students access an opportunity for learning.
Matt in Ojai said, my wife's a second grade teacher. My brother's a high school teacher. They're both putting in 50% more work and time than usual to provide students with a quality online learning experience. The teachers doing it right and taking online learning seriously are really working double time. That's Matt in Ojai. Matt, I have no doubt, seeing firsthand the amount of effort that goes into it for those in education providing this. And let me just close our conversation by saying thank you to all the professional educators who are working so hard trying to provide a quality experience online under these most trying of circumstances. My thanks to Child 360 Chief Research Officer Don Kurtz, to USC Professor of Clinical Education Eugenia Mora Flores, and from UCLA Center X, Director of its National Board of Professional Teaching Standards, Aaron Powers. Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes up next, and then it's BBC NewsHour at 1 o'clock, and then Take 2 with A. Martinez at 2 o'clock here on KPCC and the KPCC app. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 10, all kinds of important news that we're going to be covering. And, of course, throughout the course of the day, we keep you updated on the latest on the fires burning in Southern California. So far, some good weather news which we can use. Have a great day.